We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome back. 4 o'clock hour. We have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Fred, do we finally have a panel? Because it was like everyone we asked must not want to come on the show again because they were all busy or they feigned vacations or something like that.
I think it's because it's the holiday. A lot of people are headed out of town. But no, we do. We've got Jane Duker, as always. We've got former Missouri State Senator John Lamping. And we have a longtime favorite, Brian Wabi, will be here in person.
The only problem with that is that with Wabi on the panel, Angie, you probably never met Wabi. No one else gets a word in edgewise. So that'll be fun tomorrow as we take you into the weekend. So I was going to do something else here before we do Sue's News, which is not Sue's News. It's Carl's News. But I asked Carl a question here a moment ago as a point of reference for something else I was going to do. And the question was, how old are your children? And you have a 17-year-old.
I have a 17-year-old daughter.
But you said at that time, you said, but she still doesn't have her driver's license.
She refuses to drive.
But that's very common because my sons, when they were in that age, they didn't seem that inspired. And they finally, my first son number one was like 17, maybe and a half before he got, it was after he was 17. But then Fred said something that completely threw me off here that I didn't expect whatsoever. And you got to pass this along because this is fascinating too.
How about old Fred Bottenheimer
right.
over
Thank
there,
you,
ladies
Kenny.
And gentlemen?
Fred, you
okay,
want to say
so,
what you
so,
told
so
us here?
So here's the thing. My two sons got their driver's licenses on their birthdays, on their 16th birthday. And you
bought them new cars, right? New cars.
No.
In the driveway, the day they turned 16.
No.
Maseratis.
I didn't start driving until I think I was 20.
What? How?
Yeah. I took a class. I took the high school class.
Yeah, I did too.
When
yeah.
I was 16
right.
or 17. The high school football coach was the driver's
kind
ed
of what we had,
instructor.
A PE coach, right.
I took
it
at St. Mary's.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Mine was at McKinley High School, but I didn't drive until I hit 20.
But why?
Because I had a lot of close friends that drove everywhere, so they would just always come by and pick me up.
So did I. I got mine the day after my 16th birthday.
Okay. Not to get too personal here, but were there no girlfriends involved, I'm guessing, because you couldn't pick them up. See, that was
that's
the thing
exactly,
that was the impetus for
exactly
my son.
Right.
Right.
That's exactly right. And yeah. that was the main impetus for me getting a car and driving is because I started to
right.
want
have
to
urges.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, because what I'm told these days, Carl, I don't know, you tell me if this is true, or Andrew, maybe you can even relate to this or have something because you're a little younger. But like when my kids were going through that, they were communicating all the time on the gaming systems with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they have their headphones on, they're talking through the game, whatever it is, Xbox, I don't even know what the hell they play. And then on the cell phones as well. So when we were talking about this years ago, Fred, we had discussions about these things, you and Carol and I, and one of the notions was, well, you know, these kids, they don't really need to
True.
See each other because they live in their basements on their phones and their games.
Yes. Well, my daughter, well, first of all, when she turned 16, 3 months later, the world closed down, so there was nowhere for her to go.
That's a variable that is important to note, sure.
But that now she doesn't, even though the world's starting to open up, she doesn't want to drive. She doesn't want to drive. She says, I can get a hold of my friends and I can see the people I want. I see them at school. And if I need to go somewhere, I have you people, meaning her mother and me.
Whoa, 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 whoa. That's when you go, no, 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 no. See, you're 17 and you're able to get your driver's
yes.
license. Because I finally told my son after he was, I'm like, dude, I'm not going to take you to your girlfriend's house anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go over there? You can, and she was younger, The Reardon men like women a little younger, so it was a pattern that certainly
that you've continued.
Yes, exactly, that he's continued. But, you know, finally he got off his ass and got his driver's license. But that's one of those dynamics I've never been able to. There's a lot of things with these kids. This is where I sound old, right?
Uh-huh.
With these kids that I can't relate to. That's one that I don't understand because I hear more stories. Now, Fred, yours is unique because it happened a long time ago.
Right.
I don't think there were a lot of kids back then that were waiting until they were 20.
No, probably not.
Now, that is not uncommon.
But they can also do Uber. Now,
yeah, my sons really wanted it at 16 because they both had jobs and they wanted to drive to their jobs.
Well, and I believe now that you mentioned that, I think that was part of what, you know, when Evan finally decided to get his driver's license, I said, look, you have to have, now that I remember back to that summer, because he was born in May. So as he turned 17, I think I said, hey, we need to get your driver's license so you don't have to have me drive you to work. Let's do this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No, 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 no.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Or Carl today.
Today. Yeah. This is a follow-up from the aforementioned Sue Thomas from Monday's Sue's News. French police have announced that they have arrested the spectator who caused the massive crash at the Tour de France.
They're not going to charge her,
though.
Where'd
they get her?
Unidentified 30-year-old woman disappeared from the crowd. She left the country, and she has been apprehended.
Yeah, they didn't name her. They said they're not going to name her, and they're not going to move forward with charges right now. So there was some confusion. I guess she is French. There was a mm-hmm. little confusion. They thought that she was German because the sign was in, like, a combination of German and French.
Allez, go grandma and grandpa.
Right, right.
And they were going to charge her or, you know, fine her, what, £1,500 or something like that?
I thought there might have been a fine,
sure,
but I think they decided against it. I don't know.
Right.
They
decided not to do that.
My sense is that she did not intend to push over the entire peloton of the Tour de France.
Then
but,
why flee the country?
Yeah, because, dude, if her name gets out there, and I'm sure people know who she is, mm-hmm. I don't think her trouble is over. Maybe that's why the Tour de France committee just decided, hey, we'll let her go. Not to spoil anything today for, like, the one person listening who might be recording the tour, but it was a good sprint finish today with, that's all I'll say. Watch today's sprint finish because it was pretty good.
You've heard of Postmates, but have you heard of Postdates? Instead of getting your burrito delivered, you can get your toothbrush and charger retrieved from your ex's house.
Mm.
Currently only available in New York and Los Angeles.
No, wait, what?
So, like,
you break up with someone.
Break with somebody. You
left still have your stuff
over
at their apartment.
You accidentally left your crap over there.
They've thrown it on the front lawn or the street, and then you can send an Uber back to get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Only in two cities right now, LA and New York, but they are planning to expand.
I think that's a pretty good service.
I had never had that problem.
There'd be enough demand for that. I'm guessing. Maybe there would be.
Mark, here's some movie stories. Willy Wonka cast has celebrated the 50th anniversary of Willy Wonka. Yesterday was the 50th anniversary. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They got back together and reminisced about their time on the set. Julie Dawn Cole, who played the spoiled girl Veruca Salt, revealed she didn't like chocolate as a kid. Meanwhile, the kid who played Charlie, Peter Ostrom, said number 32 on our list.
We have a little audio today as well. I'm going to stop the thing. Here we go.
Gene and I kind of had, you know, this little custom of every day after lunch, we would share a chocolate bar walking back to the set to do the afternoon filming. And I remember that about Gene. It was very special, very kind.
Oh, there you go. That's
did
very
you,
nice. Who
you,
was that, though?
That was the kid that played Charlie.
Okay. Oh, wow. Sounds a little older.
Well, now, he's 65, probably.
I really liked that.
I know, but
first...
I don't like hearing people older when I envision them as young.
I really like that first version with Gene Wilder. Wasn't a big fan of the Johnny Depp one, though.
No, it was weird.
Yeah, it was Tim Burton's.
Right, right. And I like Tim Burton stuff, but that one did not work for me at all. You know, that was one of those movies, though. Do you think it... I don't think Alexa has seen it. Does it play... Does it hold up today for kids? If kids watching that who's 7, 8, 10 years old, I mean, I remember
the
that, 71 that was a
version?
Big movie. Yeah, the original version.
It's kind of trippy.
Right. Well, but that's what I mean.
And
does
he's
it
mean
hold
to
up?
Those kids.
He's mean to those kids.
He's mean to those. He lets you think they're dead.
We should be mean to the kids.
Well, yeah,
it's
they're
fine.
Awful.
I don't have a problem
awful
with
kids.
That.
What is your favorite?
Lucas Saw, great band name, too, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, they yeah. stole it. That's how they stole it. What's your favorite Indiana Jones movie?
Indiana Jones.
And the Temple of Doom?
No, the first one.
No. Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't that one just called Raiders of the Lost Ark?
And then they changed it.
Right, okay.
They changed it to Indiana
that one.
Jones.
That's the one I like
that
best.
That is the best one. And we were arguing outside. It goes Raiders, followed by Last Crusade, followed by Temple of Doom, and then way, way, way at the bottom is Crystal Skull. The hat, the fedora from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom has sold at auction for, guess how much? Fred, how much do you think?
I'm awful on this stuff. Let's say $5,000.
No, it's going to be higher than that. It's going to be higher.
Try hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, let's say $750,000.
$500,000 is how much the hat from Raiders of the Lost Ark went. This is Temple of Doom. Andrew?
Aren't they the same hat?
No, different hats.
How much did the first one go for?
$500,000. $300.
Okay, there you go. He kind of gave us a hint there, I think. Do I have audio for that, too?
You have a clip from Temple of Doom.
Here we go.
You want the stones? Let them go! Let him go!
It's a good soundbite.
That's the one where they ate the monkey brains. Temple of Doom is one of the reasons that there was a PG-13, because they took people's beating hearts out of their chests, and it was a PG movie.
Oh, my.
Amazon has released the teaser trailer for Cinderella, starring Camila Cabello.
This is it. Soon everyone will know my name. Dresses by Ella.
Life outside this basement starts right now.
If it's a million to wait, I'm gonna be that one.
Okay. Oh, what is the point of this movie?
Wait, it's funny here.
You're gonna know my name.
Okay. Do you want to go to that ball?
Yes, I was just crying and singing about it like 2 minutes ago.
So they're winking it.
Didn't we already have like a...
This version of Cinderella, she dreams of making it big, creating and selling dresses, which is very much like Cruella that just came out.
I thought that Lily James' version was pretty good.
It was.
I thought she was great.
But this is not the Disney version.
No, I would understand that just based on... That was... Kenneth Branagh directed that, right? 2015?
I believe so. I believe you're right.
I like that. I didn't watch it when it first came out, and I happened to catch it maybe a couple years later, and I was surprised that it was halfway decent.
And the Disney remakes have been hit and miss for me. Like, people love Beauty and the Beast, and I thought it was just okay. I like Jungle Book. Jungle Book with Jon Favreau directing is a fantastic piece of filmmaking.
Looks like this is also going to... Who's the other name attached here? Hold on. Who's Kay Cannon?
She is the director. She wrote and produced Pitch Perfect.
Oh, there you go.
If you like Pitch Perfect, you might like the new Cinderella.
Idina Menzel is going to play the step. Did you mention that?
I did not.
Mini Driver. You don't get enough Mini Driver these days.
I really love Mini Driver.
I do too. Remember that show? Did you ever watch the show where she played the grifter? What was that thing called? It was a very short-lived show.
The Grifters.
I think it was called The Grifters.
Yeah,
I loved that.
I loved that.
It was a
great
show.
Was that on FX or something like that?
Yeah, it was like one of those FX shows that maybe only lasted...
Two or three seasons.
Right, but wasn't it good?
I thought it was great.
Yeah, thank you, Fred. Carl, you don't know that one?
I didn't watch that.
It's well worth watching if you ever can find it.
1990, well, that was the movie. Wait a second here, because the TV... Are you sure it was still called The Grifters?
I think so.
The TV show?
I don't know.
I'll find out.
All right, let me move on. There's a Spanish company set to bring 3D printed steak to the market. Spanish company called Nova Meat says that they
How
want
about
to
no meat or not meat.
They want to make it an alternative to all the issues that bring meat to the planet. These steaks use 100% plant-based material. One person who tried it said this.
Oh, we got sound again.
Sorry.
I'm still looking for Mini Driver here. Sorry about that.
It didn't have the feeling of a traditional steak, but I was pleasantly surprised because I did not expect that the texture would be so well achieved. It is the first time I have tried it, and I thought it was still in a more basic phase, but I was very surprised by both the taste and the texture.
Fred found it.
The Riches, by the way. That's
The Riches.
With Eddie Izzard.
Eddie Izzard was in that show. Yeah, that was a good show. It was only 2 years, by the way. So this whole 3D printing thing, that makes my brain hurt. It really does, and I don't understand how you can make a steak with a 3D printer. I can understand how you can make other things with a 3D printer, but not a steak.
But not
and
food.
Well, because
and
the flavor,
it. How
the flavor thing
it?
Is what throws me off.
Yeah, because isn't 3D mostly made of plastic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
which you should
be eating.
You should be able to make it out of other things, like just like any
beef?
Kind of generic.
I don't know. Well, say like beef?
Whatever
like
you put
like
in
a
the
generic,
printer.
Well, like a generic, yeah, like a generic sort of protein.
Soy. But,
yeah, soy, yuck. Something like that. Maybe soy, maybe like tofu.
Would you try it?
Sure, I'd try it. I eat non-meat all the time. It's good.
I know, but Mark, would you try it if they said this came from a printer?
Oh, sure.
I mean, try it once.
Well, yeah, I don't understand the whole.
But would you buy it? If someone gave it to you, that's one thing. You'd have to go out and buy it.
You know, I was out at, I know, Carl, you would be familiar with Leica. They've done several movies.
Box Trolls is the worst. Box Trolls sucks.
I didn't like that one. Paranorman. My favorite was Paranorman.
Excellent.
There was a guy that had his liner on the DVD copy of Paranorman. Really good critic. I can't remember who. That was me. I forgot about that.
Oh, well then. It's the son of Phil Knight of Nike.
Right.
Yes.
Travis Knight. I bring it up because Brad Schiff, Fred's gotten to know Brad. Brad is local. His father used to be a television anchor here, Steve Schiff, for many years. You probably remember
Channel 4.
So I went to Leica to visit the studio a few summers ago, and I was amazed because these movies, that's stop motion animation, what they do
it's
at Leica.
Well
so
done.
They sometimes, and this is another thing that makes your brain hurt, sometimes during the course of a week when they're making a stop-motion animation film, they only get seconds completed. Mm-hmm. Not minutes completed. No. Seconds completed. But a lot of the different props that they used and different aspects of the film were from a 3D printer, and he was showing me some of the things that the 3D printer made, and it's really incredible.
They've only made five movies. Coraline, Paranorman, Box Trolls, Kubo and the Two Strings, and then Missing Link.
Missing Link wasn't that good either.
No, but they sell the props from the previous movie to make money to make the next one, which
is that
true? Yes.
I didn't know that.
You can sell the props because they have a limited budget and they're a small little company.
Travis Knight is doing this because he has a passion for the art form, and he went on to he directed Bumblebee. He took a step out of the studio for a little while. He did a pretty good job with Bumblebee.
Which is the only one I saw.
Those movies don't really make money, but I think that they keep doing it for...
It's passion.
Right. But one of the things that I think is happening with the studio is they're being used for this 3D printing. They're kind of at the forefront of some of the things with 3D printing, at least with films. That was my understanding. I could be getting some of that wrong, but I think it was an important component of what they do. Did you have anything more here?
And finally, on Sue's News.
I get back to the music here because I let the music go. There we go. And finally.
The Department of Defense in the United States is the largest purchaser of explosives in the country. Do you know who the second one is? It might surprise you.
Well, half of my neighbors when I lived in Jeff County, that they would be certainly good candidates for that, but I don't know who would be.
I was going to say New York City Parks Department.
Okay, Fred.
I'll say Disney.
You are correct, Fred Bottomer. Disney. Right.
Good guess, Fred. Yeah.
Because of all the fireworks every night at all four parks.
Yeah.
Well, no, not at Animal Kingdom, but they do it down at Downtown Disney, which is now called Disney Springs. So, yes. They're right behind, and it's not like there's a big gap. They're right behind the Department of Defense.
And who's going to the downtown fireworks display on Sunday?
I am.
You are going to go?
Yeah.
You're going to park here and then walk? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to wear Kevlar? You're going to be armed? What are you going
to
do? I'm worried about your safety, and I'm worried about my safety.
From upstairs?
Would you get a good view from up there, though?
I think you would.
I don't know about that, because you have the federal building in the way. I'm not sure you get a great view. If it was to the west, you get a good view from
where we are. I'll let you know on Tuesday.
All right. Well, I think I might come down for that.
Can we do that?
Our boss said we could. She did in one of our weekly meetings.
Really?
Yes, she did.
Well, that might not be a bad location, if in fact you can see things to the east.
Right.
I don't know if you can, Carl. I really don't. 424, 97.1 FM Talk. Why is that so loud? Because I didn't pop the right pot down. That's why. Good Lord. Ryan Young with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. They have a new report out. The cost burden of federal regulations. You're going to be stunned how much red tape costs. $1.9 trillion. We'll lay it out for you. Also, it's the anniversary of the iPhone this week. Ian Scheer from CNET after 5 o'clock.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I've always called The View maybe the most defining political talk show of the modern era. Meghan McCain is leaving The View. That's one of the stories we'll cover a little bit later this afternoon. We have an audio cut of the day before 5 o'clock. Don't forget tomorrow, as we take you into the holiday weekend, it's a Reardon Roundtable in the 3 o'clock hour. Jane will be here. Brian Wabi on the panel. Former state Senator John Lamping, and a bunch of things to talk about from the week as we will officially take you in to the 4th of July weekend and holiday. Ryan Young is with me this afternoon with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. They put together an annual report on the cost burden of federal regulations. The number is quite staggering. We're going to go through some of this report this afternoon. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Before we get into some of the particulars, I want to just share a story that I'm sure you'll be able to relate with. When we were in the you know, the throes of all this with COVID last year, and in California in particular, when you heard these stories about, you know, not enough oxygen. Well, there was always enough oxygen, but it was, you know, the infrastructure for the oxygen. I have a friend who works in that particular industry, and one of the things that he was telling me is because it takes so damn long just to build an oxygen tank outside of a hospital in California because of the regulations, it's a 3-year process to do things out there, and that was one of the issues.
Yeah, and there are lots of other stories you could tell. There's a company called Evans that makes drum heads for drum sets. It's the same kind of plastic they use in face shields for personal protective equipment. They wanted to retool their factory in order to move from away from drum heads and towards PPE, which was sorely needed at the time.
Right.
And you had to get 45-day permits for this, 90-day permits for that. If you're a distiller wanting to make hand sanitizer, there's a whole other mess of permits you have to go through. It's all over the place.
So you guys call this report the 10,000 Commandments, right? You do this every year where you highlight some of the, you know, the regulatory issues in this country?
Yeah, 10,000 Commandments, as it turns out, is a bit of an understatement. Every year, the government tells the public, here's how much we spent, here's what the national debt is up to. Anyone who's interested can Google that in seconds. But there's no equivalent like that for regulation. So we have to do the best we can with what limited information the agencies deign to make public. And the best estimate that we have, which is in our annual 10,000 Commandments report, is about $1.9 trillion. That comes out to about $14,000 per household. It's baked into the cost of everything you use and everything you buy, whether it's food, clothing, transportation. $14,000 per household is more than they spend on any budget item with the exception of housing, which itself is made artificially expensive because of regulations.
Well, sure. I would think that it would have to be. Now, one thing I think that surprised me, it might surprise other people, in this report, so we heard from the former president that he was, pretty big on deregulation and stripped down some of the federal regulations. But in your report, you say major new regulation is Trump's own creation. How do those two things work out together?
He did some good things and he did some bad things. During COVID, he got rid of about 600 federal regulations. Of course, this is out of over a million. and of course, he had a one in, two out rule for agencies. For every new regulation you put in, you got to get rid of two old ones. That helped to clear out hundreds more regulations. But he did all this via executive order, which can easily be undone by the next president. And that's exactly what happened on day one of the Biden administration. So President Trump had his own party in the majority, both chambers of Congress, first two years. And while he did issue those executive orders, his priorities were, shall we say, elsewhere. So he didn't work with Congress to make those reforms permanent through legislation, which is much harder to undo. So he made that mistake. And at the same time, he also ramped up his own regulatory initiatives in areas from antitrust to going after media companies for political reasons. So he did some good things. Let's not downplay that, but he also did some bad things as well. And on net, I'd say it was roughly a wash.
Included in your report here, I have to highlight this because there's a little bit of a St. Louis connection. We have Washington University here, and the Wiedenbaum Center at WashU, along with the George Washington University Regulatory Studies Center, both estimate jointly that agencies spend $88 billion, or they spent $88 billion in fiscal year 2020, to administer and police the federal regulatory state. $88 billion just to police it all, right?
That's right. They have on the order of 300,000 staffers and their salaries. And of course, they need their infrastructure and equipment that they need to do their jobs. But in a way, that's actually incredibly economical. They spend less than $100 billion to impose nearly $2 trillion on the rest of the economy. For every dollar we give to the agencies, they take away 20 from the rest of the country. That's not the kind of efficiency I admire, but it's efficient in its own way.
Ryan Young with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, they just put out a report on the costs of regulation. What I'm told, Ryan, by my friends on the left constantly, is that we need these federal regulations, and we need more to keep the American people safe, because we can't trust anyone if we don't have the federal government involved in every single aspect of our lives.
I would say that, yes, we need governance, but that doesn't always require government. Whenever you leave people free to find ways to get along and to create value for each other and to cooperate, they oftentimes find a way to do it. So I'm not against all regulations, but I would say that when we already have more than a million individual regulatory restrictions, all contained in a 185,000-page code of federal regulations, it's a bit much, and I think we could pare that back by quite a bit and still have the kind of regulatory system that progressives would be happy with.
Well, and I mentioned California. I mean, the issues in California, that's state-based. So that anything that a state or a municipality would have is on top of the federal regulations. So that makes it even worse, doesn't it?
That is an excellent point. The $1.9 trillion I quoted you, $14,000 per household, that is federal only. State regulations, local regulations, building codes, zoning regulations, land use rules, environmental regulations, all of those are extra on top of what we quote in the report. So we lowball the figure by quite a bit.
If I had to predict, I feel pretty comfortable in this, Ryan, if we talk next year, let's say in 2 years, in 2023 or 2024, that the $1.9 trillion, that's only going to grow over the course of this administration, wouldn't we expect?
That is the nature of things. The number has never gone down in the 28 years we've been doing the report.
So it has never gone down. That's interesting. So no matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat, it has never gone down.
That's right. Yeah. Trump mostly treaded water. He held it steady. It didn't go up, but it also didn't go down.
All right. So along those points, that kind of walks me into my question here, because, and I do this every once in a while, Citizens for Government Waste, they highlight all these things that have happened in federal government, and it's easy to get outraged by some of this stuff. And I think what you're highlighting here from the Competitive Enterprise Institute is kind of in the weeds for most people in this country, because they don't really think about regulation or how it affects them. And you rightly point out that this is a tax that is passed along to the American people. But do you have, this may be a rhetorical question, right? Do you have any hope that we might realistically be able to reduce the amount of regulation in the future?
I do, if we aim our reforms at the right place. I'm a short-term pessimist, but a long-run optimist, because while it's nice to get rid of this or that regulation, we should and we can treat the symptom or the system that causes this. Institutions matter. So if we improve the rulemaking process to require agencies to go over their books every 10 years and clean out old regulations that are obsolete, if we have Congress vote on new major regulations, and we have this and that other idea that we expound upon in the report, if we make those kind of system level reforms, we will have a regulatory system that is much more fair, much more just, and much less expensive.
So when you talk about things that are outdated, though, are there rules and regulations that have just worn out their welcome, where they no longer matter because of the times? And if that's the case, how would they be enforced, and how would that be an issue anyway?
Well, that adds an element of uncertainty, because a lot of times agencies just decide on a whim, yeah, we're not going to enforce this rule anymore. But nobody knows that. And if they want to really get somebody, they can pull some old rule out of the books, say, yeah, we're going to throw this book at you and that one, even though we haven't enforced something in 50 years. That's not a weapon that agencies should have in their holster, and we need to take that away. So the kind of retrospective review where agencies regularly need to go through their books and clean out old rules is an important reform that we need to pursue.
Are these agencies, are they imposing these regulations on their own for the most part? They don't all need congressional approval, right? This stuff comes from agencies in and of themselves oftentimes, doesn't it?
They have some discretion, but they take it too far. In an average year, Congress will pass a little over 100 laws, but agencies will pass over 3,000 new regulations. That's in the last decade, that ratio, which we call the unconstitutionality index, because Congress is supposed to pass all laws, has been over 20 to 1. For every law that Congress passes, agencies will usually issue between 20 and 30 new regulations. And a lot of them, they do pass unilaterally without congressional authorization, or they make up a story where Congress passed this bill 50 years ago and this new thing that they never foresaw, we can regulate under that
right,
authority.
Right, right. Yeah, I can see how they would do that. So you guys highlight that the five most active rule-producing executive branch entities, the Department of Commerce, Health and Human Services, the Interior, Transportation, and the Treasury, account for 1,563 rules, 41% of all the rules in the, you call this the Unified Agenda Pipeline. What is that?
Well, every year, one of the few transparency requirements that agencies do have is that they have to submit to the President's Office of Management and Budget all the rules they have in the pipeline. Here are the rules we want to pass in the next 6 months. Here are some longer-term rules we want to pass in the next year or two or three. And in an average year, that's published twice a year, and that's the average is about 3,600 new regulations that agencies have in the pipeline. So that's one of the few transparency measures we do have, but that's what the Unified Agenda is all about.
What's the origination of a lot of these things? I mean, are there people in rooms that decide, oh, we need a rule to do this or a rule to that? Who are the people that are coming up with these things?
They're all over the place. A surprising amount actually come from industry. If an established company sees competitors on the horizon, maybe there's some startup that they think has some potential, something they can do is convince an agency to pass a new regulation that maybe the existing business is big enough to shoulder the costs of, but the startup can't afford.
In other words, the lobbyists get to work on some potential regulation that's going to help them and maybe harm the competitor.
Yeah, that's happening right now with Facebook. They're taking out ads in Washington publications saying Facebook favors new regulations because they can afford to hire armies of content moderators or to pay programmers to develop sophisticated algorithms. The startup that's in somebody's dorm room right now that might take them down in 5 or 10 years, they can't afford that.
Yeah.
So, of course, Facebook is going to lobby for that type of regulation. A lot of it is just anti-competitive.
Right. Well, and that's what, you know, we have one of our senators here from Missouri, Senator Hawley, has been very active, as you probably know, on some of the antitrust legislation. I mean, these things are going to have to eventually come before Congress, and some decisions are going to have to be made because I think people are seeing more issues with the competitive nature of the lack of competition out there with big tech in particular. Well, thanks for passing along, Ryan, the report, because I do think it's interesting. It gets a little in the weeds and complicated for some people, but I think it's important for everyone to realize how much the burden of federal regulations really does impact them on a regular basis.
It is, and the report's online at CEI.org. Thanks so much for having me on,
All right,
Mark.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate it. CEI.org, if you'd like to find the list, the annual report, $1.9 trillion in annual costs on Americans every year. And I appreciate Ryan coming on here this afternoon. Still to come this afternoon, we have an audio cut of the day before the afternoon is up. I have a lot of good options for that. I mentioned Meghan McCain is finally leaving The View. She had a big dust-up with Whoopi a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to miss those. I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to miss the dust-ups because they got to get someone on there. It's not going to be interesting at all. I've said this before. I don't really think I've ever watched an entire episode of The View, but they've given me plenty of audio cuts of the day over the course of my radio career. I have a love-hate relationship with the show The View just because Joy Behar is just simply one of my favorites of all time because she is probably, if I had to rank the most annoying people in media, she would definitely come up at the very top of the list. But over the course of the years, and if I remember correctly, maybe I'm misremembering this, Andrew, wasn't Rosie O'Donnell on The View for a while?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Oh, yeah. There. So there was a period, and this goes back many, many years, probably back into the late 2000s, if I remember correctly, that Rosie was almost like Trump in a way. Bear with me here. Because on any given day when Trump was president, when he was running for a campaign, you never knew what was going to come out of his mouth at any time, and it provided unbelievable moments of audio. In fact, oftentimes it would happen right before the show started. Same thing with The View. You could always count on Rosie O'Donnell to say really, really stupid things. And that certainly held true with Whoopi and some of the others as well. But it's gotten hot on The View where, you know, it's gotten nasty. And that sometimes happens with political talk, but they've gotten so angry in this whole dust up with Whoopi and Meghan McCain. So now she's leaving. So Meghan McCain is leaving The View. She made the announcement today.
I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off. I am here to tell all of you, my wonderful co-hosts and the viewers at home, that this is going to be my last season here at The View. I will be here through the end of July to finish out the season with all of you, which I am grateful for. This was not an easy decision. It took a lot of thought and counsel and prayer and talking to my family and my close friends. It is not easy to leave, but I feel like this is just the right decision for me at this moment. This show is one of the hands down greatest, most exhilarating, wonderful privileges of my entire life.
Except I hate my co-hosts, I think is what she wanted to say.
We have this incredible life here. We're surrounded by my family, his family, by friends, by this incredible support unit. And I think as any new mom knows, when I think about where I want Liberty to have her, you know, first steps and her first words, I just have this really wonderful life here that ultimately I felt like I didn't want to leave.
Okay, but then, and I don't have the audio of this, but Meghan McCain also played the victim card a little bit today, and she said,
no.
I know.
Can't imagine that.
My final note to a world watching, the media needs to do a better job of covering the women on this show. I don't think so. I'm going to throw a flag on that. She said, we are covered with deep misogyny and sexism by the media. It's not sexism. You're a bunch of idiots for the most part. You too, Meghan McCain, half the time. So, and she says, if five men were doing what we do every day, I really do believe that we'd have a Pulitzer Prize. If there was a man that was annoying and as dim-witted as Joy Behar, I would argue that person probably would not be on television on a show like The View. Why that's somehow acceptable, I don't really get it with women, but Behar and McCain in particular, I mean, it was just a catfight after catfight. Meghan McCain, obviously her father, and I took umbrage with Trump going after John McCain, not because I love John McCain, just because I thought it was disrespectful to a guy who was in the military. But Meghan McCain has not been right on nearly every issue. She's done her best on some of this stuff, but of course she didn't like Trump to begin with. So what would be great is, here is where I would award you, you know, something that you claim that you should have in the form of some sort of honor from the media. Put someone on there that can actually have a discussion. Put add some meat to it. And I would say this, and I've said this to you, Andrew, as much as, you know, I watch Fox primarily, there were periods where I just didn't watch Fox, not because I didn't like the politics, just because out of habit. I think that some of the discussions on Fox, I don't think it would be too difficult to, and I'll use Scott Jennings as an example. Scott's on CNN. He's the only person along with Doug High that's keeping people sane. Selena Zito was on CNN. If Fox maybe, here's what I was told, by the way, and Jennings told me this, maybe I'm speaking out of turn. I said, you know, we were at the baseball game a couple of weeks ago. I said, you know, wouldn't take too much for Fox to really kind of upgrade the talent that they have on their guest segments, because a lot of these people are paid. And what his comment was, well, they don't pay very much at Fox that people come on. So that left me with the impression that a lot of the folks that you see on a regular basis, they're not compensated. Maybe they don't have contracts. But if you wanted to spend some money, there's some good, smart people out there who are pundits that you could probably put in a position that are just as interesting as some of the people that you see on The Five or any of these other shows on Fox. I just think it wouldn't take too much to upgrade it. Same thing with The View. The View is a silly morning show where people probably who are watching it don't even care about politics. I guess I just insulted the Housewives of America, whoever watches that show. Do yourself a favor. Don't watch The View. Watch The Damn Price is Right with my friend George Gray, who's going to come on next week and do The Price is Wrong. Again, much better television.
Get more at 971talk.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's better over here.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.